welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. I am your host, Jason Verlinde. As always, that's John Rauhaus playing in the background. Thank you so much for tuning in. We have so much going on here. I can't even think straight. But let me just first off thank you all for all the great emails regarding our last episode of the podcast with Steve Poltz. I got so many emails and so much great feedback on that episode. It truly was one of the greatest Fretboard Journal podcast interviews we've ever done. It took me a while to figure out. I know I can't top it, but I at least can come close. So I'm releasing this episode a little bit early to you all with CJ Lewandowski of the Poe Ramblin' Boys, because it's almost as good. Now, there are no elephants in this story like there were with Steve Poltz, but we have a lore mandolin, which is almost the next best thing, right? So I hope you enjoy this conversation. Behind the scenes here, I don't even know where to begin. We have a Fretboard Summit happening August 25th to 27th. It's going to be at the Old Town School of Folk Music in Chicago, Illinois. I am hard at work figuring out which of the many incredible subjects that we've had in the Fretboard Journal will be present and how it's all going to go down and what other surprises we can throw your way. I can tell you right now, one surprise that wasn't at the first two Fretboard Summits, we're going to have a full-fledged luthery show, handmade guitars, acoustic and electric. We're going to have around 50 luthiers displaying their wares. So that's a new thing. I think it's the first guitar show of its kind in Chicago. Plus, all the other Fretboard Journal nerdy stuff we always do at the summit, and some incredible live music performances and a lot more. So we haven't let the cat out of the bag yet, but if you are a subscriber to the Fretboard Journal magazine, digital or print, which you all should be, hopefully you all are, you're going to get first dibs on tickets, and tickets are going to be pretty limited to this thing. So you're going to want to be a subscriber. We're going to be releasing information in a few weeks, as well as ticketing info. And it's, again, August 25th to 27th of 2022. Fretboard Journal's 50th issue, if you are a subscriber, is going to be coming out in just a few weeks. We're putting the finishing touches on it now. It's going off to press very soon. An incredible issue. As always, I'm the slowpoke who takes forever to finish his stories. But I did a great piece. I got to interview a bunch of people about Alexander Dumble and his contribution to the amp world. We've got some stories from you all on how the Fretboard Journal has changed your life. We've got an incredible Bela Fleck story. We're talking bluegrass today by Tristan Scroggins, and so much more. So again, I hope you'll join us. Fretboard Journal 50th issue coming out in just a few weeks. Go to fretboardjournal.com, click on the subscribe button to make sure you get one. What else can I say? We just got back from Wintergrass, the annual bluegrass festival in Bellevue, Washington, just down the street from us. And I had an incredible time. We got to host another vintage instrument workshop. The entire 90-minute video we are going to edit and release soon, so stay tuned for that. And we have some new videos on our site right now, too, so a lot going on. And today's guest, CJ Lewandowski, has a lot going on, too. Imagine, if you will, for 1 minute, that the instrument of your dreams, it could be a 59 Burst, it could be a pre-war Martin Dreadnought, whatever you imagine seeing on your guitar wall and loving, imagine that instrument for sale for, I don't know, a half to a third of what it would normally cost. But there's a catch. You have to fly to another country halfway around the world in the middle of a pandemic to go pick it up. Would you do it? Well, CJ did. He found a lore mandolin available in Greece. I actually knew this mandolin was available and was contemplating briefly, like, how could I get this thing? Local pickup only. It's like one of the many Craigslist ads. But CJ went and picked it up locally and had quite the adventure. And that is the story we are going to hear today on the podcast. CJ also is, of course, a member of the Poe Ramblin' Boys. They have a new record out. It's out March 25th. I think I'm going to bring CJ back on the podcast when we get a little closer to that release date, just so he can talk more about the record. Because frankly, we filled an hour just talking about how one goes about flying to Greece in the middle of a pandemic and picking up a lore mandolin and all the intricacies of that. It's a great story. I hope you enjoy it. Again, the Fretboard Journal, all the stuff we do, the way I'm able to make a very, very modest living doing this and supporting my family and our writers is because of all of you out there supporting us. So please subscribe to the magazine proper if you haven't yet. We have a PDF edition if you are shunning paper goods, which I understand. It's a weird time, and we're all trying to be minimalists to a certain degree. But if you want the keepsake print edition, which you can easily flip on eBay when you're done reading, again, go to fretboardjournal.com. We got those two options for you. We also have a couple of deals for you. If you want a deal on some shoes, Bedstu Shoes is offering Fretboard Journal readers a 20% discount. Just use the code FRETXBS when you check out on bedstushoes.com. These are great shoes. They're like your favorite heritage brand, just a little bit more stylish. And they have men's and women's styles and a whole bunch of boots and shoes and you name it. So if you're looking for some really nicely crafted leather shoes, go to Bedstu Shoes. We're also brought to you by Acoustic.coffee. These are two guitar nuts. I'm actually going to have them on the Fretboard Journal podcast in just a week or two, who decided to start a coffee company. It's an incredible story. And the reward system they've built out is pretty incredible too. As you drink their coffee, you earn points. And the more points you earn, the more stuff you can get, including Fretboard Journal subscriptions, accessories for your favorite hobby, all sorts of stuff. If you use the discount code FJCoffee2021, you will get your first bag free when you buy two or more bags of their coffee. Again, the URL is actually just acoustic.coffee. There's no .com or CA or .org or anything. And they are two fascinating guys. They're going to be on the podcast very soon. Also, last but not least, also going to be on the podcast very soon, our friends at Retro Fred Vintage Guitars, which, as you all know, one of the great guitar stores and mandolin stores in the world. They currently have a 1958 Paul Bigsby-built electric guitar. These things do not come up for sale in the open market pretty much ever. It's $750,000. It's not cheap, but I want you to go check out their listing and then poke around at their other listings. They have far, far, far more affordable guitars and mandolins and banjos too. But Retro Fred is just one of those incredible stores that gets one-of-a-kind instruments you're not going to find anywhere else. I have learned so much about musical instruments from their website, and I know you will too. So go over there and tell them the Fretboard Journal sent you. They are sort of the equivalent of what Mandolin Brothers was back in the day when Stan Jay would put out that incredible newsletter catalog that we'd all geek out and drool over. Retro Fred is basically doing that right now in New York City with their current inventory, and they are so informative and so helpful. I know you will love checking out their website if you haven't yet. All right, those are my big announcements. I'm probably forgetting some. I probably should hire one of you out there to help me out with Fretboard Journal projects in the future. I don't know if anybody's looking for a part-time virtual job. Maybe shoot me a note at podcast@fretboardjournal.com and without further ado, here is CJ Lewandowski of the Poe Ramblin' Boys telling us all about the incredible adventure he just undertook to get himself a Lore signed Gibson F5 mandolin. I hope you enjoy it. Got like a museum behind you.
It's my whole house.
Is it?
Yeah, my whole house is like this.
That's incredible.
Yeah, I got a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Does the hat, is that your hat or is that a famous hat?
That hat over there, that's a Carl Shiflett's hat when I was with the big country show. That was on one of his album covers with Rebel Records, and he gave it to me while I was with him. So, kind of famous hat. And then this hat here, that was Don Brown's hat, the Don Brown Lore. I don't know if you've heard of that, Madeline, but that was Don's hat. All kinds of little pieces around here I could tell stories about all day, probably.
It's like a museum. I love it.
Yeah. I got like little tiny things that I could tell a 10-minute story on.
I have a pair of Bill Monroe shoes at my house that I'm always worried my wife is going to throw away, but they were on eBay when his son cleared out his estate.
Oh, yeah.
And there was like coffee tables. There was all sorts of stuff.
Coffee table. I've got a buddy of mine has one of the coffee tables, and he's been threatening to give it to me. I'm like, come on, I need a coffee table.
Yeah. Yeah. I just always think my wife's going to throw them out because they've, there's no markings on them to say these belong to Bill Monroe.
I tag stuff.
You tag stuff.
I put little tags on all kinds of stuff. I've got a set of his cufflinks over there on one of the shelves. And it's like, don't touch these. Like, cause, you know, somebody come in here one day, if I'm something happens to me, it's just a set of cufflinks. But I go through and I tag stuff. I get crazy with it.
Do you have one piece of memento music history that like you love more than you pull out at a party more than any other?
Not really. I guess it just depends on who's at the house, like what they like, you know. Yeah. What they're like, a guy I met this weekend, we roomed over at Spigma in Nashville. He's a banjo guy. So I've got one of Earl Scruggs's like blood pressure pill bottles from right before he died. So I sent him a picture of it today and he's like, how in the hell do you have this stuff? I'm like, man, I don't know. People give me the weirdest stuff.
It finds you.
Yeah. He's like, you want to sell it? I'm like, not really. Cause it's just so odd.
All right. Well, we will eventually talk about the Poe Ramblin' Boys, but before we get to that, you have one hell of a mandolin story. So why don't you talk about your trip?
Okay. So are we recording right now? Is this the podcast part?
This is it.
Okay. This is it, live and in person. So let's see. I think a lot of people that if you know my name, then you probably know that I love F5s. I love Gibson. I love mandolins in general, but I love a lot of builders, but I grew up around vintage F5s. The first band that I played in when I was in Missouri, the original mandolin player, he had went to fiddle at that time because he had kind of neuropathy in his hands and he couldn't hold a pick. So he could hold the frog of a bow better. So out of 50 years of the Ozark Bluegrass Boys, I was one of three mandolin players and one of two mandolins that were played. He had a February 23 Lloyd Lohr signed F5. Mm-hmm. And then his brother, that was Jim Orchard. His brother, Rich Orchard, had a mandolin that's known as the HF Toro mandolin, or they call it the Rhinestone Lohr. It's got rhinestones in the peghead. So when I'm 17 and 18 years old, I was carrying a 23 and a 24 with me everywhere. So I had this like, and then 30 miles down the road was the Don Brown F5, February 18th, 24, which I have possession of that one as well. So it's just crazy. As soon as I started learning how to play, I was around those vintage instruments, including guitars and, you know, 37 Herringbones and 37 D18 and 41 D18 and classic Granadas. And anyhow, I was around a lot of vintage instruments. So I was bit by it. And so as soon as I got old enough to be able to afford to maybe go travel and see this stuff, I started kind of like documenting this stuff. I got a paper copy of the F5 journal that Daryl Wolfe had put together. This was probably a 90s version, maybe. Mm-hmm. It was Frank Ray's version, and he made me a copy of it. And every one that I would play, I would mark it, you know, that I would. So I've played probably around 70 of the known lures. But
did you leave notes too, like tasting notes?
I do. Yeah, I take notes, and like if I like something about it, if something's weird about it, there's a, like, for example, there's a 24 F5 in Knoxville here that has a three-piece neck. Why does it have a three-piece neck? Because some of the 22s did, but a February 18th 24 should not have a three-piece neck. But maybe it was in the 22 batch and it came back, and there's just, you know, Gibson was a factory. It was rare oddities and weird things going on. So they were just slapping stuff together more than anything. Not to say that it wasn't fine instruments or anything, but, you know, they had a job to do. They had a certain number of instruments to get out the door, so they did what they had to do. But back to the story, I wanted to find something. You know, I was always on the hunt, and there's mandolins, the Jim Orchard mandolin. I would love to have that one day. I really do, because it's my hero's mandolin for one, and it's an amazing F5. The Don Brown mandolin, it's tied to Don Brown and Frank Ray, two of my Missouri heroes. So it's cool to have that and be a third generation player you know, on that third generation Missouri player on that. So anyhow, I'm a part of multiple groups and stuff like that, Facebook groups and things like that. And I know a bunch of these vintage aficionados and that kind of deal. And there's a Gibson, let's see, a vintage Gibson mandolin group on Facebook. And about 2 years ago, this mandolin popped up on this Facebook page, undocumented, uncirculated, F5, according to this post, right?
Yep.
So this post says that it's a July 9, 1923, two numbers away from Bill Monroe's mandolin. Bill Monroe's mandolin is 73987. This mandolin was claiming to be 73989. So the asking price at that time was low at that time. So I watched, you know how Facebook is. Yeah. And you know how vintage instrument people are too.
Yes.
A lot of us know everything. So being that it had never been seen before, it was in a foreign country. It was in Greece. According to this post, it was in Greece. Mm-hmm. The guy that posted it, he was in Athens, Greece, according to his Facebook page. English, I guess, was, you know, assuming 2 years ago, no one knew what was going on because the English was broken. You know, the written English was broken on Facebook. The price was super low. The pictures were not good. No one had ever heard of this mandolin before, ever. So there was a lot of criticism going on, to say the least. And a lot of people were very suggestive, harshly suggesting that this guy needs to sell it a different way. Why are you selling it on Facebook? Mm-hmm. Why aren't the pictures that good? Why can't you spell Lloyd right? Mm-hmm. He only spelled it with one L instead of two, you know, all this stuff. And that started 2 years ago. Yeah. Long story short, he posted it three times on this vintage Facebook page. He posted it three times over a 2 year period. The last time before I kind of bid on it was, he had lowered the price by $10,000. So then again, people are, you know, it kind of caught my attention at that time, but it's still like, this is a weird situation and we don't know what's going on. Nobody's ever seen this. So I started contacting some of the people that I know about, you know, vintage instruments and vintage mandolins, and said, what's the deal with this mandolin? And says, no one knows nothing about it. So a few months ago, he puts it on the Facebook page again.
Yeah.
And he puts videos up of him opening the case and then kind of zooming in on the serial number and zooming in on the lower label. So therefore he's been around the mandolin, but a lot of people, my biggest problem was, does somebody in, obviously he's been around it, or maybe mm-hmm. somebody has sent him these pictures. Is he in possession of the mandolin? Mm-hmm. That was my biggest thing, because he was asking for a wire transfer when people were asking, you know, how would we pay you for this? What's the deal here? A lot of people were saying, you need to come to the United States. George Gruen needs to see this. Walter Carter needs to see this. Darryl Wolfe needs to see this. You know, we need to authenticate this.
Yeah.
So me personally, I got kind of tired. This third post, he lowered it again. Mm-hmm. by $10,000. And I'm just like, either this is too good to be true, or this is just something that everyone else is too stubborn to do anything or too scared to do anything.
Yeah.
So me being me and me being kind of crazy sometimes, especially with mandolin stuff, I'll go leaps and bounds for mandolin stuff. This isn't the first crazy story that I have. It's not a full mandolin, but we can get into that later.
Yeah, but apparently we need to.
I messaged this guy on Facebook. His name was Anthony.
Yep.
And I can't say his last name. I wish I could. I don't know. Neotitis or something like that. And he's works at the National Conservatory of Music in Athens, Greece. Mm-hmm. His grandfather started a mandolin orchestra, according to him, you know, started a mandolin orchestra on the Zakynthos Islands, which is it's a little island between Italy and Greece. There's a chain of 13 islands. And ironically, it's that island specifically is mentioned in Homer's Odyssey.
Okay.
So ancient, you know, ancient history going back with all this stuff, obviously ancient history because it's Greece. But so I said, would you want to do a, I would like to do a Facebook video with you. You know, that I would feel comfortable with that. And he did too. So it was like midnight over there, 4 o'clock here at the house. And we got online, and that's when I knew, like, okay, this guy, yes, he is in Greece. English is definitely his second language.
Sure.
So there's a language barrier here. So this is a little tough. And three, does he have the mandolin? You know, I wanted to see the mandolin in a video, him with the mandolin more than anything.
Sure.
Well, he reached over, not even out of the frame of the camera, reached over, and boom, there it was, an F5. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it matches the pictures because it had a broke scroll and that. So I was like, there it is. He's got it. He's got it in his hands. So I started asking him questions about it. And that's when he told me that it was his grandfather's. And his grandfather died about 20 years ago, left it to his mother. His mother played very little, but when he was a kid, his grandfather seen that he had interest in music. So he put him in the conservatory that he teaches at now, the National Conservatory over there. So he put him in Anthony in the National Conservatory of Music. And now, 20, 30 years later, he teaches there, which is pretty neat. But he plays classical guitar. And I said, so why do you want to sell it and why at this price? He said, well, I don't know anything about them. He said, I do know that they are, you know, I do know that this is two numbers off of Bill Monroe's. He didn't know what he had until he started looking online a couple of years ago. He just thought it was his grandfather's old mandolin, you know? So he said, I know what I have, but I want to get, he said, this is a holy grail piece to a mandolin player. My holy grail, he was looking at a Telecaster, a 63 Telecaster in Germany.
Okay.
Munich. And he wanted that Telecaster, and this was the money that he was going to take to buy that Telecaster. And I said, okay. I said, well, my next thought was, if this is fake, this is going to scare the guy off. So I said, all right. I said, the best thing that I can think about now is I just fly to Greece and meet you. And he said, he kind of looked up and he said, yeah, I think that's fine. You know, in broken English, of course, but he said, I think that's fine. I think that's a great idea. And I said, well, the problem is here, if I want to see it, I want to hold it, I want to authenticate it. Like I said, I've been around enough lures in my lifetime that I'll be able to know exactly what this is as soon as I see it. So he had mentioned Don McCrossey's name while we were, you know, talking. So there was another call there. And I asked him if he had anyone he trusted that knew English a little bit better, because some things I didn't understand with him, you know, him telling me. And I was worried. I was very concerned about him not understanding me. Mm-hmm. So we got one of his friends to kind of talk the deal. Mm-hmm. A lawyer wrote up some documentation, whatever, before I even went anywhere. And so I had the paperwork sitting right over here. The documentation is split right down the middle. It's half Greek, half half English. And we had to have that because the country of Greece, they needed to know what this money was that was coming around. But anyhow, he had mentioned Don McCrossey's name. And so I called Don McCrossey of Red Diamond Mandolins. And I said, Don, what do you know about this mandolin here? And he said, well, I'm of course, I've never seen it. But he said, my apprentice at the time when that mandolin was for sale, the second, you know, the second posting of that mandolin.
Yeah.
So he was going to fly. Anthony was going to fly to Columbus, Ohio. And we were going to meet him. I was going to authenticate Don McCrossey saying this.
Yeah.
Don McCrossey was going to authenticate the mandolin. And then his apprentice was going to purchase the mandolin if it was legitimate. So I said, so what do you think about it? He said, what's he asking now? And I told him, he said, the best way I guess is he needs to just fly over here. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I'm thinking about just booking a flight over there. And he said, or you could do that, I guess. I said, yeah, I guess we could do that. So the more I got to thinking about it, I needed somebody to help. So Don McCrossey, I sent the funds to Don McCrossey. He's become a really good friend of mine. And so I sent the funds to Don McCrossey. Whether I was going to buy the mandolin or not, I needed someone at home to initiate a wire transfer if I was going to be in Greece. So
okay,
Don McCrossey said that he would do that. So we did that. Sent money to Don. And, you know, Don said that he would take care of it. You know, call me as soon as you see the mandolin and whatnot. So anyhow, the on December 1st of 2021, I flew to Athens by myself, not knowing what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. So I got over
in
there
the middle of a pandemic. If anyone's listening to this years from now,
like, in the middle of a global pandemic. And as soon as I booked the flight, I got something from the United States government saying, like, you're going to they call it a red zone, I think is what they termed it as, because Athens or Greece in general was a high risk country mm-hmm. for COVID cases. And so that freaked me out. But I was like, you know, I've got to go do this. Like, I've got to go save this thing. If this is real, I have to save it, and we got to bring it. I kept saying bringing it home, but I guess it's been home for a long time because I don't really know the history of it. We're working on that, but it's been there for a long time because no one in the United States before the vintage instrument market ever happened, it's never been here. Yeah. When, you know, it's never shown its face ever. So I went over there the morning I got in town, and he's like, well, do you want to go to dinner? And I was like, man, I'm wore out. And he said, well, 9 a.m. let's meet at the bank. So there's a lot of great public transportation in Athens, but I didn't want to do that because of COVID and all that stuff, because I wanted to make sure that I could still come home. So yeah. I walked everywhere that whole week. I was over there for a week, and I walked everywhere that week. So I 45-minute walk to the bank that morning. I got up real early because I was super excited, of course, and got a cup of coffee and just hoofed it, man, to downtown Athens. And I met him outside, and he, you know, same guy, same, you know, yeah. He was super cool, very nice guy. And I was nervous. And we walked in this bank. Was like something that you would see in like Ocean's 11 or something in the movie. It had columns. It was marble and granite everywhere. You know, it was a world bank. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense, it was just something that you'd see in Harry Potter, even, you know. So we had to show identification. If you weren't a part of that bank, you could not get in. They wouldn't let you in if you didn't have an account. So they let us in. I was his guest, and we walked through, went to the elevators, and we went four stories down. He said, we're going below the city. I was like, do what? He said, we're going below the city right now.
When you get killed, if this was a...
Yeah, I was like, that, okay,
didn't turn out well. Yeah.
This is mob stuff. You know, so I was nervous to begin with, but I'm like, all right, what is down here, you know? So we get down, and he said, we're four stories below the city right now. I'm like, okay, no one can ever hear me scream. Yeah. But no, the doors opened up and it was just like another, it was another bank down there, you know, like, all right. Well, I knew it was in a safety deposit box, but I did not know that it was this scale of things. So I sat down in a little lobby area there and he had to do his business and he was gone for about 15 minutes and came back and he had it in a, like a, I didn't see the mandolin at all. It was in a, like a hiking bag, the case and everything. He had it in a big duffel thing. So he just comes out and he's got this duffel bag on his back and walking through. And I'm like, where's, you know, what's the deal? I expected to see this old rectangle beat up F5 case and you're carrying that. Okay. So we went back upstairs and there was like this historic library or, you know, something like that, that had ancient books in it, in the bank. And that's when he pulled it out and there it was. It was, you know, that at that moment in time, when he pulled the case out of there, it's like, that's it. That's a lore. That's a F5 case all the way. A vintage, you know, a 22 to 25 case all the way. I know that for a fact. And then he opened it up and I thought that's it. That's the deal. That's the real deal. So my blood pressure was through the roof and my heart was jumping out of my chest. And it's like, I just flew 5,500 miles just to see this. And it was real. It was legitimate. And I could not believe it. And the one thing that one of the first things that I could think of was all them old guys on the Facebook page have said, this is a scam. Oh man, what are they going to think now? I said, I showed those guys, you know, I was at one time I was so tired of him because that guy was, he was legitimately trying to sell his grandfather's mandolin and he didn't know how to. And he even came to me that day too. And he's like, I called George Grund and I called Walter Carter and that stuff. And he said, they wanted to charge me, you know, 15-20% or whatever it was. I don't remember the exact number, but he said they wanted to charge me. And so therefore I would have to tack that on top of the price. I would rather just get my money and let somebody else have it for a decent amount of money instead of getting that upcharge. He said, that was my whole deal the whole time.
Yeah.
So it's a July 9, 1923 sidebound mandolin, which, you know, that has the black stripe on the rims, not the three ply trim on the top. Mm-hmm. Bill Monroe's was sidebound. That's one of 20 mandolins, one of 20 lores are sidebound. So it truly is like very, very rare. And when I started looking into the sidebound mandolins and then the batch around Monroe's serial number, the one in between this one and Monroe's doesn't exist. They built them in sequential, you know, just consecutive numbers, boom, 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 boom. So we know that there's one, but no one knows where it's at. So 73988, it is it destroyed? Is it under somebody's bed? We don't know. So mine's, I guess, the closest one after Monroe's. The one before Monroe's is a retop, 73986, and 73985 is a beautiful, never been touched, never been played mandolin. So anyhow, I sat there for, you know, I immediately called Don. It was like 3 a.m. I immediately called him. I said, it's real. It's here. He's like, how's it sound? I said, I don't know. it had ancient strings, man. I never seen a set of strings on a mandolin that old. And so I was going to tune it up a little bit, you know, and I was afraid of the A and E strings. So I was like, I'm just going to tune the D and the G up because they're wound. I can get by with that. So I had a tuner and a pick and a flashlight with me and whatever else I had on me. And I tuned up them D's and G's and kind of hit it a little bit. And Anthony's like, shh, you might want to be, you know, don't want to be too loud. We're in the bank.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I just flew. I've been on a plane for 24 hours, and this is what I came to see. I can't even play it, you know? So I had no idea what it even sounded like. I just got to see it for about a half an hour. And then he was like, well, what do you think? And I was like, well, it is what you told me it was. It had been, there was a, somebody over the course of time had brushed a lacquer over the top of the, or over the mandolin, even over the tuning machines and everything. So that was a little bit of a disappointment, but it wasn't bad because there was these bubbles and stuff that were on it. So back to Greece though, I called Don. Don said, I'll get to the bank ASAP. As soon as the bank opens, I'll be there. We've already got it set up, sending the money your way. So that was, I guess that was a Thursday. So I figured, you know, by Monday. So the weekend I was cool. I was on vacation in Athens. So I went and seen the Parthenon and I went and enjoyed good food and all that stuff. It was amazing.
In the neighborhood. Why not? Right.
I was, yeah. Was it do as the Greek or went in Rome, but yeah. went in Athens. So
yeah,
went in Greece, do as the Greeks. So great food, everything. And it was so easy to maneuver around there. I chose to walk around everywhere because of the COVID thing. That was a little hectic, but Monday rolled around and the transfer didn't come through yet. So that was a little rough. So anyhow, Anthony and I, we stayed in contact the whole time. We, the one thing we did do that night after I had seen the mandolin was we got together for dinner and it went back in the safety deposit box. So I said, well, the only thing that I'm concerned about is you're going to have money coming into your account and you have the mandolin in a safety deposit box. Yeah. I said, what are we going to do here? And he said, well, he said, it's in the safety deposit box. So he said, once we sign this agreement, he said, you take the keys to the safety deposit box. It's in my name, but I can't get in it if I don't have the keys. And you can't get in it if you don't have me. Yeah. And I was like, that makes sense. So neither of us had the mandolin. And man, that was the longest weekend because I knew it was just sitting there waiting, you know. And the banks closed at 2 p.m. every day in Greece. And it was only Monday through Friday. So Saturday, the weekends, there was nothing. So even though U.S. business was still going on,
yep,
nothing was happening in Athens. So it rolled around. Nothing. I kept contacting him. We went out to dinner a few more times. I'm like, what's going on, man? You know, I had booked my flight, I think, for that Tuesday to fly home. And I had to move it. I moved my flight two times.
Oh, man.
Because the transfer hadn't come. So I had to move it once. I wasn't bad. The second time I had to move it, I started kind of freaking out. Because for one, I needed to get home. We didn't have to work or anything like that. The band didn't have to play. But I wanted to get home.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get to mandolin. So anyhow, we kept in contact and everything and seeing each other. And one morning, finally, he's like, well, you need to get home. And I said, well, I can't move my flight anymore. I have to rebook. And it's going to be $2,000 for me to fly home if I rebook. And I really don't want to spend that, you know. That was a round trip. My round trip was $2,000.
Okay. I was going to ask. Yeah.
I would have spent $2,000 and then I would have spent another $2,000 just to get home. So anyhow, we went to the bank and they were like, oh yeah. There was a little, it's here. The money's here. I'm like, okay. Well, they said, well, you have to prove what the money's for in order for us to put it in your bank account. It's like, how many days has this money been sitting here? But that, you know, that didn't matter. So we had to run around town all day long getting that together before 2 o'clock. And then he had to teach at the conservatory. So he said, well, he said, do you trust me? He said, because if we don't get this done before 2 o'clock, we can't get the mandolin out of the bank and you have to leave at 6 in the morning. and the bank won't be open. So he said, do you trust me to take this mandolin with me now? It's like 10 a.m. He said, do you trust me to take the mandolin with me? And then after I get done with lessons tonight, which was about 10 p.m., I'll come to your Airbnb and I'll deliver the mandolin. I was like, I guess so. He said, well, I'm going to bring it to you. He said, the money won't be in my account until tomorrow afternoon, probably. And he said, you're taking the mandolin home with you. And I said, okay. I said, well, if you trust me to fly home with that mandolin and the money is not even in your account, then I trust you to take the mandolin for, you know, 10 hours or however long it was. So that's what we did. And that night, it was actually, I'll never forget it. It was Bobby Osborne's 90th birthday. Bobby Osborne is one of my heroes, man. And it was Bobby's 90th birthday. And I had planned, before all this, I had planned to go to see Bobby for his birthday and take him to dinner or whatever. And I had bought him he likes those fancy suits. So I'd bought him a suit for his birthday and we're going to do all that. But no one knew I was in Greece. Not some of the band. I think maybe one or two people in the band might have known. But I let only people know that needed to know where I was. But no one else knew I was in Greece that whole time. And so I flew home on the 8th of December with that mandolin. And we touched base. I took it to straight to Jonathan McClanahan. And he had a sway in the bridge top there, the saddle. And then he put a nut on it because the spacing on it was crazy. I guess the classical style that they played over there, he had it set up different. So, and I immediately, the first date I played it was December 15th at the Station Inn in Nashville. And it's done really well. It's crazy. Took pictures of, and I even documented, I have a video, which I should send it to you, I guess. I was standing out on the balcony of the Airbnb. And I was like, my name's CJ Lewandowski. I'm standing here in Athens, Greece. If you see behind me, here's the Parthenon. Here's the Temple of Zeus behind me. And I'm holding a July 9, 1923 Gibson F5 that everybody thought was fake. I'm here to tell you that it's not. I'll do that. And I took pictures of it. It was chilly that night. So I couldn't take it out. And it was midnight too, so it was super dark outside. But anyhow, I took some pictures of it sitting in the window or in the doorway, and you could see the Parthenon behind it, the mandolin sitting there with the Parthenon up behind it. So I documented it, you know, decently. But man, first thing I did when he got there, and I said, I'm going to put strings on it. And so I put a brand new set of strings on it. And he said, do you mind if I stay? I said, yeah, you can stay all you want to. He had to get home to his daughter, but he said, I want to hear this. We put them on, and that totally changed it. Those strings were so light gauge that were on there, and just that, those new strings and that maybe little bit of down pressure on that top, man, that thing just blew up. It was insane. So it's
incredible.
It's a great one. And I'm glad that I made that crazy trip to do it. It was worth it.
Yeah. So I must confess, I was not one of the cranky guys, old guys, but I'm on that Facebook group and I saw that mandolin, and I don't think I saw it the first time, but the second time, you know, Allure, I know it's a highly volatile market, but they're always in the six figures, and this wasn't even in the six figures.
No.
And I was like, somebody who doesn't, you know, I've got a family and whatever. I'm like, somebody's going to be able to get on a plane and get this thing for a song.
Yeah.
Little did I know I'd be talking to him 2 months later, 3 months later. But I mean, that is incredible. It didn't, I don't even know. I mean, I know it's the Mediterranean climate. Did it need many repairs or anything? Did it have cracks or anything?
There's too little, I guess at the bottom of the F holes where those little circles are at the bottom of the F holes. I don't know the terms, but the larger part of the F hole on the bottom, there's two little, just on one on each side, just a little hairline crack on each of those, which you see that in most F5 that have been in the United States. that have been played quite a bit. That's a fragile point. Somebody had took a the bottom point. If you're looking at the mandolin, if it's sitting up, the bottom point on the treble side, of course, the bottom point, the on the back, there was that little piece of binding on the bottom of the point that connects right back to the back and scoops around. That little tiny piece of binding had fell out, and somebody on that island, I guess, carved out a little piece of wood, because where are you going to find ivroid triple binding?
Yeah,
on an island in Greece. So they carved out, like, it looks like I don't know, it was a soft wood, because you can see the little carve, you know, somebody just took a pocket knife and they slipped that piece in there and glued it in. So that's being replaced. And then there was the back seam up kind of by the neck, by the back of the heel there. On the treble side, there was a loose spot. And as I sat with it around home, it started to, I just started to notice it more, I guess. Mm-hmm. The mandolin was playing perfect. It has the original frets, has the original bridge, has the original tailpiece, the original tuners, original case. And the tailpiece is engraved Ian Kowalski. Hmm. So that was done in the factory. It matches, you know, how the Gibson is inscribed in the tailpiece. It matches that font. Then let's see. That was about it. The scrolls broke and the scroll was non-existent. It does not, it's nowhere to be found. I tried, you know, I asked him and he's like, man, he showed me pictures of his grandfather with it in probably the late 70s or early 80s teaching his mandolin orchestra, and it didn't have a scroll then. So where it is, no one knows. That's been the biggest question here lately is what am I going to do? Or am I going to replace the scroll on it? And initially I was going to, but talking to Don McCrosty, he said, well, he said, I'm going to tell you this. He said, we can repair it and no one will ever know, because he's done that before on Lors. He said, we can repair it and no one will ever know that it's ever been broke, but we can't unrepair it. So you need to decide what you want, because it's got that Monroe thing going, man, all the way, you know. And Daryl Wolf, that started the F5 Journal and, you know, all the crazy mandolin archive stuff, he said, he called me. He knew that I was in Greece. He's one of my good friends, so I kept him in contact the whole time. And he was more excited than me. And he said, everybody, he's got a gravelly voice, he said, everybody wants a lore with a broke scroll, but nobody wants to break their scroll, man. So he's like,
true.
You got it. Just run with it. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
So it's got a few little things, but you know, the original bridge still has the pencil markings with the serial number on the bottom of it. Like, man, it is legit. So one thing that happened, this is a side story. I had it up in the overhead because that case is too clunky to slip underneath the, sure. And I should have bought a seat for it home, or I should have brought an empty Calton with me.
Yep.
Because I carry Caltons everywhere, but I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah. You thought you might have been mugged. Yeah.
I didn't know.
In another Calton.
Well, in all my Caltons too, if y'all see what I carry sparkly Caltons. Like, I can't walk down the streets of Athens with this glitter. Calton, it would have been rough. So I did get chastised a little bit, especially by my friends at Calton. They're like, why didn't you take one of our cases? I was like, yeah, man, my bad. But the original case is great. It's fine. But somebody on one of the flights, I think, let's see, it would have been the flight from Athens to Amsterdam. It was the first flight home. I flew from Athens to Amsterdam, Amsterdam to Atlanta, Atlanta to Knoxville. So somebody must have threw their backpack on there or something, maybe with a wheel on it. Oof. I don't know. And they just, it smacked. And that back, on that back, on the, let's see, it'd be the top. So it'd be the base side, the lower bout of the base side on the back. The finish just like, just it blew up. Like it bubbled. Uh-huh. It bubbled and it just turned to dust. It just, to where it hit, it just puffed, you know, like one of the mushrooms you step on, it just puffs. That's what it did. And it was all in the case. And I thought, oh, here we go. I just paid all this money and it's ruined. Like the first trip home, I ruined it.
Yeah.
Well, it's lacquered. It's lacquered over, and it's lacquered over heavy. We've took a black light to it, and it's really heavy. Well, I consulted McClanahan, Daryl Wolf, McCrosty. I took it to Joe Spann. I've been a lot of places since I've had it. And the one thing I was noticing that this mandolin, like I was saying earlier in the podcast here, this thing had little bubbles in it, like up on the scroll and then on the back or on the ridge line at the binding, it had these little bubbles and stuff. And I couldn't tell when I was at the bank if somebody had put a layer of varnish on it or lacquer or whatever, because we were dealing with something from an island that nobody knew what this mandolin was. They were just, I guess, I call it mummified. This thing was mummified. It was preserved.
Yeah.
So I got to looking and I was like, oh, it's down to the wood. The coloring's still there, but it's down to the wood. God, what am I going to do? I was saying a lot worse words than that in the middle of the airport. And so I called a few people right then. I'm like, what the hell am I supposed to do, man? And anyhow, I took it. Well, the black light shows the lacquer, the original varnish under the lacquer, and then it doesn't show anything right there in that bare spot, and I quote unquote bare spot. Well, when I took it to Don McCrosty a couple of weeks ago, because as I was playing this mandolin, we play in Gatlinburg down here all the time, Gatlinburg, Tennessee, at Old Smoky Moonshine, and we're outside, and it's, you know, I get it at the beginning of December. I'm excited as hell about it. So I'm going to play it. So I'm playing it in the cold, like cold weather. And this thing's been through hell and back. If you look at it, the wear and everything on this mandolin underneath of that lacquer, this thing's been played. The scrolls broke off brutally. This thing has been played. So I'm not worried about it. So we're playing and playing and playing. And as I'm playing this thing, the mandolin is moving more than it ever has. It hadn't been played in 20 some years. So the mandolin's moving more and it's loosening up more of them spots than bubbles. Like, this is weird.
It's like a volcano.
Yeah, this is weird. Like it's wanting to break out of its shell. What is this? So I started one day, I got home and I started picking at it, which probably people think I'm crazy for picking at finish on a lure, but I knew it wasn't right. I knew it wasn't right. So I was messing with it. Anyhow, I found out, I thought that we could get to the original underneath of it without having to, well, a certain luthier I took it to, I will not mention their name, they said, you're going to have to strip this whole thing down. You're going to have to refinish it. I'm like, nope. It's going to, no, I'm not going to do that. Well, I took it up to Don, and he had a, instead of a black light, he had a UV light. That UV light shined different colors, of course. So from what we were seeing in the black light, the lacquer was green, the varnish was orange, and there was nothing showing up on that bare spot. So we thought we were down to bare wood. Well, the UV light, the lacquer was blue, the varnish was orangish color, yellow orange, and then there was this tint of green thing going on right there in that bare spot. So we got to looking at it and, well, it's got, you know, the finish is already flaked up a little bit. So Don's like, you mind if I pry up some of that stuff and see what we can do? Like, well, it's already messed up. Go ahead. So he got underneath there and I had to leave because I about threw up this finish peeling off of this lure that I just got and the noise it was making. Ooh. but it come off cleaner than what most people would think. But for me, that being mine, I was just like, this is sickening. And anyhow, he peeled off that spot and he wet his thumb and rubbed on it. And he said, this is the varnish. He said, this is varnish right here. There's nothing. This isn't bare wood. This is varnish. I said, really? He said, yeah, this is varnish. He said, so what do you want to do? And he looked at me like, you know what you want to do. And I know what I want to do. Let's do this. And I was like, okay. So he actually has the mandolin right now, as of today, which is almost the 1st of February now. He has the mandolin and he is the top coat. Like what I'm saying is that thing is bubbling. That lacquer is bubbling. Whoever put that lacquer on there did not, thank God, they didn't prep the mandolin.
Yeah, it's on
the mandolin. So yeah. It's just sitting on top of the varnish, man. It's not even
dip or something.
Yeah, it's, you can peel it off. Like you can peel it off in a sheet. And he did. He showed me, he sent me a picture the other day. He sent me a six inch piece of the lacquer that pulled off of that mandolin. So as I say, mummified, it's just going to pull off and it's going to expose the original. And it's okay. Like he showed me a spot. It's three sections. To the left is lacquer. The middle is what was the remnants of after the lacquer was gone. And then the next spot is that remnants buffed. He just took it and just like buffed it. And it's exactly the way it should be. So
insane.
You know, most everybody, you've seen it on that Facebook page, I guess. They were like, oh, it's been oversprayed and it's been, it was brushed on for one. And for two, it won't be for long because it's actually going to be, it's going to be the original finish again. There's no question about
it's
it.
It's not like, taking out the original finish at all when he peels it. That's amazing. No, what luck.
You can't say that it's not an original finish, man. There might be a touch-up spot or something, but it's the original finish. It's insane how we lucked out on that.
So did you ever get a sense of why the seller who could have flown to America and traded that thing for any Blackguard Telecaster under the sun at any dealer, why didn't he want to leave Greece or couldn't he just couldn't, or
I don't think he could. I don't think he could because of his job with the Conservatory of Music. He has to work a certain number of days, teach a very specific amount of people from what I understood. So he could not be gone. Like his family still owns the house that his grandparents lived in on that island. Zakynthos Islands, Zakynthos. And he goes out there maybe in the summertime. Maybe, but he hasn't done any of that since COVID. So he started selling, you know, previous to COVID, or tried to sell. And then I just don't, from what I gathered from sitting with him, you know, we got together four or five times and had dinner and hung out and that kind of stuff. Super great guy. He wanted out of it. He wanted somebody to cherish it. He wanted somebody to love it. Because it was his grandpa's favorite mandolin, you know, and he even told me, he said, my grandpa, he said, I don't know where he found it. I have no idea. He said, but I will, he said, I'll find pictures. And he's been sending me some stuff.
Wow. Cool.
So we have some documentation of the mandolin, but he said he bought this mandolin because he was teaching the orchestra and it was louder and would cut through all the others because, you know, a typical mandolin orchestra mandolin in Greece is a bowl back.
Sure.
So it doesn't even make sense, you know, that there was a lore there. They didn't know that that mandolin was frowned upon because it wasn't a traditional Greek instrument, you know? Yeah. So
incredible.
Yeah, man. I don't know why he did that. I think he wasn't being too greedy. I think he's a musician. He wanted somebody to have something that they would love so he could get something that he loved. I think that's by the end of the week, you know, we had discussed that a lot.
It's also wild to think that there's a Lore mandolin that until you picked it up a month ago had never played bluegrass at all.
Never. Yeah, 98 years old. Fixing to be 99.
Yeah.
Never played bluegrass. And I don't know where it was shipped. I'm trying to figure that out. I looked up the Ian Kowalski name. There was a guy in Chicago named Ian Kowalski. I don't know if he played. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I just looked it up like ancestry.com. Mm-hmm. There was an Ian Kowalski that died in 1922 in Chicago. So maybe this was Ian Kowalski the second or junior maybe. Or maybe Ian Kowalski was someone in Poland or mm-hmm. wherever over in Europe. And that mandolin was just shipped to Europe from the start because Gibson didn't start stamping made in the USA until later on, you know, 27 or 8, I guess so, maybe 29. But during the lore period, we don't know unless we have a hard piece of documentation, a hard piece of paper that says it was shipped to, or that we have the actual story to it. We don't know what was shipped to Europe and what wasn't, or anywhere, Mexico, Canada, you know.
Yeah.
Out of the States. So I'm trying to figure that out. But from what I understand, his grandfather owned it a long, long time. And so I'm getting all that information together. But just the, you know, the story itself, it never played bluegrass. And, you know, he told me that he did not know who Bill Monroe was until he looked up the serial number and the name inside of that mandolin.
Yeah.
Lloyd Lore. Lloyd Lore is so tied to Bill Monroe's name that it popped up on the internet when he was searching these mandolins out, that it came up with Bill Monroe's name. And that's how he figured out, like, his grandpa wasn't going around saying this is two numbers away from Bill Monroe's. His grandfather had no idea who Bill Monroe was, had no idea that Bill Monroe had a Lore, had no idea that his was two numbers off, you know, had nothing, had no idea about bluegrass music at all. And it was so crazy to talk to him because he was excited. He was very excited because he loves music, but someone that it was like a little, he was like a little kid with it. Cause he'd never heard it. So, you know, I'd play some of our stuff for him and then he played some stuff that he plays and we were just going back and forth and he's like, I don't know how you do that. I'm like, well, I don't know how you do that. So we went one night and seen some traditional Greek music with a bouzouki and stuff like that. That was amazing. You know, so I got to see some of Greece's, you know, native music, traditional music. But, you know, he loves Stevie Ray Vaughan. He knew who Stevie Ray Vaughan was, and he has a Stevie Ray Vaughan guitar.
Yeah.
But he don't know anything about it. Sure. It was crazy to me. Like, you don't know who Bill Monroe is, but you have a lore. You have a lore. But, wow. Man, the world is a lot bigger than what we could ever imagine. But the world is also very small. And it's crazy how music can connect people because our language barrier wasn't bad. It wasn't extremely tough. There were certain things that it was hard to communicate. He said that he could understand more than he could communicate back.
Sure.
So he told me, he said, I can understand what you say, but you might not be able to understand me because I don't know how to speak it. I know what you're saying, but I might not be able to communicate it back. So it was crazy though that I met a guy and I went to a place where I never thought I'd ever go to before. I never thought that I would see the Parthenon or be in Greece or anything like that, much less anything else I've done in music. But that in particular too, I never thought I'd known a lore, but
dude. Yeah, you do now. All right. That was my talk with CJ Lewandowski. We're going to have him back on because he does have this incredible new record coming. And we barely even talked about it. I feel shitty about that. But I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you enjoy all that we're doing here at the Fretboard Journal. And by all means, if you do enjoy what we're up to, leave us a review over on Apple Podcasts. It helps others find out what we are all about. It also helps brands know that we are doing business here and have listeners, and all that helps the greater good. So thanks as always. Till next time.